Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Steve Stenger took over the reins of government in St. Louis County on the 1st of January. His November election came as the region in general and the county in particular was still reeling from events in Ferguson. In many ways, it still is, but there are myriad issues on his plate as he moves into the second half of his first year in office. I'm Don Marsh. County Executive Steve Stenger joins me in studio to talk about the past months and what lies ahead. Steve Stenger, nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
How are you holding up after 6 months?
I'm holding up quite well.
How have those first 6 months jived with your expectations for this job?
You know, I would say that as a council person, you don't really get the full picture of what county government's all about and just how large of an organization it is. You know, you don't really... it's hard to grasp the breadth of a $630 million budget and all of the functions that that we have in county government and all of the really the services that we provide to our community. And, you know, as a council person, you're one of seven. And when you're the executive, it's a completely different story. I would say that nothing could really prepare you for that job, you know, prior to sitting in that chair and, you know, being... being there and making the decisions that you have to make.
Well, there's no turning back now, obviously.
No, there is no turning back, and I will tell you, it's been a real honor to have the job, and it's been one of the most interesting experiences of my life.
Of course, a lot that goes on in that job, too, that wasn't and wouldn't be anticipated. Things pop up, as they certainly have. One of the things that most people are talking about now, you among them, is this minimum wage. I'll call it a flap because it seems to be taking on that kind of proportion between St. Louis County and the city. Correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is that you are not philosophically opposed to the minimum wage, but don't feel that it could be implemented in St. Louis County.
Oh, I would say, you know, I grew up in a working family, and I continue to be part of a working family. And I want to see all of our working families have higher wages. I would really like to see that, and it's something that I'm very much in favor of. We have a legal impediment in St. Louis County on setting a minimum wage, and that's our primary impediment. I mean, it's certainly not a philosophical one. You know, at the state level and the federal level, I'm very much in favor of, and if, you know, frankly, if we could do it on a local level, I'd like to see it. I think first it would be prudent to have it studied. And I think that's something that's lacked locally thus far. I'm not aware of an economic study that has been done by a proponent that would allow us to really know, you know, what a benchmark is and what a wage, what the proper minimum wage would be for our region or for the city or the county, for that matter. But in the county, analytically, it's difficult because you have we have a legal impediment. We cannot set a minimum wage within our municipalities. You know, of course, we have 90 or so.
Yes, so I've heard. You know, Vince Shamo, when he was mayor of St. Louis, had a plaque on his desk. He said, "Ready, fire, aim." And people made light of that over time, as did he. Do you think that's what Mayor Slay has done in the way he's reacted to this minimum wage thing? Moved too quickly, perhaps?
You know, I don't know that it's my position to be critical of what the mayor has done. I can only speak, you know, in terms of St. Louis County. And in St. Louis County, if we didn't have the legal impediment, I would want to see a study. And that's certainly something we haven't seen to date. But no, I wouldn't be critical of his approach.
Did you and he talk about it before he made his proposal and got the machinery moving?
No, we didn't have any conversations about it.
I'm surprised. Are you?
You know, I don't know that I'd say surprised. Certainly, you know, something of this magnitude would be good to talk about.
Does this bode well for a working relationship, do you think, with Mayor Slay?
You know, the mayor and I have, you know, we have a nice relationship. We certainly have each other's cell phones. We've texted each other. We've called each other. And we've consulted each other on other issues that we've had. This was just one that we didn't really have, you know, too much of a conversation about.
Do you have any idea as to what's going to happen in the city? Can they possibly go ahead with it, do you think, if the county can't be a part of it?
I think they certainly could go ahead with it if they, you know, that's their legislative body is, you know, from what I understand legally, I don't believe they have the same legal impediments that we have in the county, in the city. So I think they could set it. I've heard some talk that some of the aldermen wanted to set a minimum wage that was dependent upon the county setting theirs. And you know, I don't know that that is, you know, I don't know that that's prudent at this point. But, you know, I think that when we talk regionally and we think regionally, I think we need to also think about, you know, the other counties in our region, you know, Jefferson County, St. Charles County. And I think that they ought to be brought into the conversation as well. You know, if something like this is contemplated. Now, once again, we have that legal impediment. You know, that's certainly a real impediment.
Given that legal impediment, doesn't this sort of make a case for some sort of consolidation? Really, I mean, it is exactly that, an impediment.
Well, I don't think that issues like this really, I don't know that we should let issues like this drive, you know, whether we would have, you know, consolidation or not. I think there are other considerations, other more, you know, real and practical considerations. That's not to say that this is not an important issue. It is. But I don't know that I would let it drive, you know, the consolidation conversation.
Okay. But there are other issues as well.
Oh, there are, certainly. But I don't think that this one, you know, I just don't think that this issue in isolation is, you know, and once again, I mean, when we talk about consolidation and we talk about our region, we have other regional partners. You know, it's not just the city and the county. Mm-hmm. And we interact with those regional partners nearly every day in the county. You know, and we do it through many of our organizations like East-West Gateway, mm-hmm. You know, our regional transportation arm. That is a place where we get together and we talk about transportation, and it is a truly regional. We talk about it from the Illinois perspective. And, you know, everyone in our region is sitting at the table, literally sitting at the table. So when we talk about regional issues, I think it's important to remember that we do have other regional partners just beside, you know, besides the city and the county.
Well, so much of the discussion, however, has centered on some sort of consolidation city-county. Where exactly are you on that? I know you've pulled back from Better Together, which seems to have that as an objective. Mm-hmm. What is your objection to some kind of consolidation there?
Well, you know, and let me talk a little bit about that first, about my withdrawing from Better Together. You know, Better Together had included me, if you remember, on their board of directors, and it was really an ex officio position, but they placed me on the website. There was a certain recoil there, and it really came about as a result of me wanting to be independent on this issue, you know, and I'm not being critical at all of Better Together. The board of directors is comprised of many people who are my friends, people that I deal with on a regular basis, and I'm very happy to do that. It's a matter of independence. You know, I represent a million people in St. Louis County. We're the economic engine for the state, and I think that it's really important that, you know, this group that's called Better Together, that, you know, implicit in the name is sort of maybe the mission. I think they began as an advocacy group, and now they've become an informational group. It's really important that the people of St. Louis County, I think, have confidence in their leader, that he is not just going along with a particular group because he's a member. So I stepped back. There was no offense taken. I think that their inclusion of me as a board member, I don't think there was a thing wrong with that. But for me, I think the independence is really the most important issue there. And I want to, you know, and as I said during the campaign, and I say it now, I wanted to take, and I want to take, an analytical approach to these things. I've been in office for 6 months. You know, we started off with a $10 million deficit on day one, and that was the results of operations from 2014. So we had a lot of repairing to do in St. Louis County, and we still do. We have communities that need to be rebuilt. We have relationships within the community that need to be built. We have communities that where we need to, you know, bridge gaps. And the answer to all that, to me, is not merger. The answer to it is, you know, the answer to those issues and the response and the resolution is going to be a comprehensive strategic approach within St. Louis County, certainly reaching out to our regional partners when necessary and, you know, coordinating where we can. But we need, you know, St. Louis County, we have some issues that we need to resolve before I think we really begin that merger discussion.
Wouldn't your job, however, be easier if St. Louis County were just one big county and not fragmented the way that it is?
You know, there's no doubt that if that were the case in a vacuum, and, you know, all else being equal, that that might be the case. But that is not the case. And we have, you know, we have 90 communities within our community, and we have other communities that are, you know, within our unincorporated areas that have, you know, organized themselves not in a formal government structure, but, you know, we have places like Afton, places like Oakville, places like Spanish Lake, where, you know, individuals have gathered together in their community. And I think that's, you know, just a natural occurrence in, as part of the fabric of St. Louis County. So that's the situation we find ourselves in. And it's the situation we found ourselves in for many years. So I take that as something that I have to, you know, work with as county executive.
But again, the question is, wouldn't your job be easier if you just had one big jurisdiction?
Well, as I said,
incorporated all of these.
Well, yeah, in a vacuum, yes. But, you know, we do have to, I mean, it is simply a fact of life that we have to consider. And I don't know if I would characterize it as easier or harder. You know, I look at communities like Webster Groves, Kirkwood. If you talk to the individuals in those communities, I'm sure they love their communities. They love their police departments. You know, they love their city government, and they like their way of life. And to suggest that I, as county executive, should step in and in some way change all that for them, I don't know that that's the wisest course for me, and I don't know that that's the wisest course for our community.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they do love their police departments, all 64. How many police departments do we have in the county?
And I understand that. And that's another thing that I hope we can talk about is some of the things, some of the conversations that we've been having surrounding policing in St. Louis County.
Yeah, that's because a number of the smaller municipalities, primarily in North County, are finding themselves in a situation where their departments aren't cutting the mustard and they have to merge, if you will, with others.
Sure, yeah.
How is that? What's your thought on that?
You know, recently our police chief wrote a letter to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and you and I had talked about it off the air a little bit. And his letter was the first step following a meeting that I had had with our police chief, with Bob McCullough, our prosecuting attorney, and our chief legal counsel for the county. And you know, we're facing an acute issue, and that issue is we're seeing departments in North County primarily seeking to consolidate or seeking to provide contractual policing services for the other municipalities. And we've been working on this issue even before then. And I've come to the conclusion, I think what we need is we need some minimum standards for policing. I know that Senate Bill 5 calls for minimum standards, but there's a six-year phase in. And I think we're going to need to get community input, we're going to need to get municipal input. And we've already begun some of those conversations with some of the municipal mayors and also police chief to police chief. And I think we're going to need minimum standards that are going to kick in sooner than 6 years. And I think we're also going to need an approval process for contracts for either groups or individuals, entities that want to contract with our municipal police departments. We are going to need an approval process through the county that I think is going to involve our police board and our county council and myself.
I want to pick up on that when we come back. We have to take a break. Our guest in studio is Steve Stenger. He is the county executive of St. Louis County. He was elected last November and took office on the 1st of January. Lots to talk about, and we'll do that when we come back. If you'd like to be a part of the conversation, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer to send a tweet, we'd love to have that too at STL on Air. Back with Steve Stenger in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Steve Stenger. I gather you're not going to be with Mrs. Clinton today.
Not today, but I may be with her this evening. I'm going to attend an event with her later today.
Okay.
Later tonight, I should say.
All right. Getting back to the issue of police. You spoke about the need for some changes. John Bellmer, the chief of police, is quoted as saying a new model of policing is needed. He wants smaller police departments to be absorbed by the larger ones and raising the standards so that the officers can do a better job in their community. That's what you're talking about.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, and that's the policy of St. Louis County. And what we had, what we were trying to accomplish by his letter to the Post was the chief to make the case to our community and to demonstrate and to show what it is that we believe we need in St. Louis County to move forward. And I think his letter did that. I think it was effective in doing that, and it's going to be followed up by legislation that I'll suggest to the council. And ultimately, it's the council's determination as to whether they want to proceed.
This is somewhat related to that, but the Missouri legislature during this past session did not act on areas of police reform. Mm-hmm. And training would certainly be a part of that. I'm assuming that's something of a disappointment.
It is somewhat of a disappointment. But, you know, we have local government, and local government can step in, and we are going to step in, and we're going to lead, and we'll lead in this area. And I think we need to. You know, there we can legislate countywide as to matters of public health, and this is a, I think this is a matter of that has a direct nexus with public health.
Where are we post-Ferguson in your mindset here? I know you were establishing the Office of Community Empowerment that was part of that. Where are we with all of that?
Do you mean with respect to the Office of Community Empowerment, or do you mean just in general?
In general, and the role that that office will play in this whole fallout.
You know, the office has been, I think, one of the best things that I've done since I've been in office. The Office of Community Empowerment was initially set up by me, something new in St. Louis County. And I want to also talk about another office that I set up, and it does relate directly with the Office of Community Empowerment. But the Office of Community Empowerment has been part of just about all of our major initiatives that we've had in the last 6 months, from things to our Great Streets program to having areas of North County and North City designated as promise zones. You know, there is an input function, there's an outreach function, and there's a marshaling of county resources function that group serves. And it's headed by Annette Slack, who's a very capable individual and somebody who's just done an excellent job. So much of what's going to happen in Ferguson, I think, is about relationships. And one of those key relationships is just recently I appointed Reggie Jones, who's the Delwood mayor, to the board of East-West Gateway. And as I said, you know, as you know, East-West Gateway is our transportation arm for our region. Mm-hmm. And there's a Great Streets initiative that is contemplated for, and we've just begun the work for, and we funded part of it just recently for a $35 million overall project, $25 million to start. We hope to get federal funding for that. When we talk about the promise zone that I talked about, we get priority treatment from the federal government because Ferguson, the Ferguson area, along with many other areas in North County that are disadvantaged, are part of a promise zone. So we get preferential treatment with respect to grants. So that Great Streets program is going to be, I think, very significant. It's on West Florissant. The southern end of West Florissant is where it will begin. And it will move all the way up through the affected areas of Ferguson. And as I said, the mayor of Delwood, Reggie Jones, is on East-West Gateway now. So he literally sits at the table while we make these determinations together, and will help in seeking federal funding for his area. And he's very engaged, and it's very important. And he'll be engaged with our Office of Community Empowerment. The Office of Community Empowerment will be engaged in that process because there's a very large portion of that project that actually relates to community engagement and having the local stakeholders take part in that entire process of what that thoroughfare is going to look like. Mm-hmm. And it's really important. And it is, and not only is it symbolic, but West Florissant is one of our main arterial roads in St. Louis County.
How would you assess your relationship with the African-American community in the county? It was a little dicey there during the election, and I know Councilwoman Irby has had a few comments concerned about inclusiveness on your part.
Yeah, you know, I what I have done is, once again, I have really focused on the relationships that I've built and the relationships that I'm building every day as the leader of the county. You know, one of my most valued relationships is with Congressman Clay. And the reason why we have a promise zone in areas of North County and areas of North City is because of his hard work and really, you know, our work together. We came together and we were coming together on that even before I took office. We met one evening in November. And it's exciting to work with someone like him where we sit down and we just have a really casual conversation over dinner and we talk about what's needed in our community. And it starts in a, I mean, it started and continued and it's continued as a very genuine relationship. And he is engaged in his community. He's engaged for St. Louis County and for St. Louis City, for our region. And so relationships like that are extremely important because they lead to concrete, I mean, and quite literally, excuse the pun, concrete things for St. Louis County. And I think that, you know, as we talk about great streets on West Florissant, it wouldn't be possible without that promise zone designation. And that came about, once again, as a result of the relationship that I have with the congressman.
Okay, that's one person.
Sure. Well, there are many more. You know, I mean, our Office of Community Empowerment has an engagement arm. And we are engaging not only with the African-American community, but with all communities across St. Louis County on a daily, hourly basis. So there are many relationships, you know, and they're internal to St. Louis County as well. We have Betty Thompson, who works within county government in the Community Empowerment Office. And when you talk about someone who's been a leader in St. Louis County, she's certainly been one of those leaders, and she's another very important relationship that I have in the African American community. As is Reggie Jones, we mentioned that, you know,
sure.
And the list would go on and on.
So you feel comfortable that any damage to relationship is at least in the process of being repaired?
Well, I think actions speak louder than any words that I could speak. And if you look at what we've done, you know, we formed the Office of Community Empowerment, as I promised during the campaign, and that office is to deal with our disadvantaged communities, and we've done that. And I think we have, the work that was done through the Office of Community Empowerment on the great streets and on the Promise Zone and all those things that I mentioned, it was well worth it already, you know.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I have a couple of calls from people who want to talk about the law enforcement situation. So let's get backtrack, as I say, and bring in Greg calling from St. Louis. Greg, thank you for waiting. You're on the air with Steve Stenger.
Thank you for accepting my phone call, and I appreciate everybody's point of view. But to get to the point of the more policing and security services, wouldn't that put more of a chokehold on a community that's already feeling unsafe? I mean, if you're walking down the street and you see a police officer, you might feel, okay, yeah, he's doing his job. But if you walk down the street and you see 10, you might feel like, you know, maybe it's not too safe to be in this area. So as far as increased policing, I don't know if that's necessarily the answer. I think more of communication, maybe more, St. Louis City, been born here all my life, went to North Sumner High School and did all this. But it's a polarized city. And people aren't there willing to communicate. And we all speak the same language.
Thanks for the call, Greg.
You know, the goal of what we're talking about is not to provide necessarily more policing, but a better quality of policing. And, you know, it's driven from a philosophy and I think from a policy that's really important. And that is that everyone in St. Louis County and everyone in our region deserves to live in a place that is safe, in a place where they're respected by police, and a place where, frankly, and I think this was sort of drove the discussion earlier, a place where people are not preyed upon for revenue. So we want to have minimum standards, not necessarily to have more policing, but better policing. And in some cases, more policing, but certainly better policing overall.
While you're talking about being preyed upon for revenue, there's a good possibility that there's some municipalities in St. Louis County that could go bankrupt as a result of municipal court reform. What happens then from your point of view if they do?
Well, if that would be the case, St. Louis County stands ready to provide whatever services are necessary. And if it was a situation where that city might disincorporate, we're ready to provide those services, and we can provide those services at, you know, due to our economy of scale that we have. We can provide those services, and particularly with respect to policing. We're the highest accredited police department in the region with an excellent CALEA rating. So we're ready and willing.
Would that put, if a few of them go down, an extra financial burden somehow on the county?
Well, yes and no. You know, we do have economies of scale, as I said, that sort of take care of that. Now, previously, and during this last legislative session, and in thinking toward the future that and there are many reasons for this, and I'll explain. We had moved for a dedicated law enforcement sales tax in unincorporated St. Louis County. Mm-hmm. And it would be unincorporated St. Louis County is where it would be applied, and that is who would vote for whether this tax should be approved or not. We, of course, were followed around by Chesterfield, and it was they inhibited our passage of the tax. And we sort of did that midway through the session because our administration had just begun, and we were assessing needs and what we might need in the future. And I don't want to call it a dry run, but we certainly needed to see what the field would look like. So we put it out there, and we tried to, you know, we did our best to pass it. We weren't exactly, you know, we weren't sure if it was going to pass. We're going to go for it again next session. But that sales tax would go a long way in helping out our police department, you know, provide the services necessary. I mean, even currently, to meet our current needs, not just thinking about the future, it's necessary. We are the only county, maybe one other county in all of Missouri that does not have the authority to have a dedicated mm-hmm. sales tax, and we just happen to be the largest and highest revenue generator for the county. For the state.
Let's take another call. Tom joins us from your home turf in Afton. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
Thank you, Don. Mr. Stinger, since the Ferguson unrest, a lot of the media conversation has focused on questions of black poverty, and that is a complex and important set of problems. But a lot of us who aren't part of that community, I think, feel a lack of resolution about these questions of policing. We've had formal protests from national and international news organizations, if you recall. I believe there's some lawsuits in process from lawyers' organizations. And we haven't heard anything from the Civilian Oversight Board in the county. How do we know they're active and that they actually have any power, that they're doing their job, if they haven't commented on any of these issues?
Well, in St. Louis County, we have a police board that is comprised of 5 members, and it's a very diverse group of individuals, and they have public meetings. And they often do speak out on issues related to policing, particularly Dr. Carr, who's on the police board, is actually also on the Ferguson Commission. So he's giving input in a very meaningful way to the Ferguson Commission and publicly. And he's you know, he's often heard, I think, publicly about policing issues. Roland Corvington is a former FBI SAC and special agent in charge. He also has, you know, a great deal to do with the success, I think, of our police department. So we do have a police board that is very active. Now, I will tell you, the meetings of the police board are not very well attended by the public, but it's on, you know, their public meetings are posted on our website and are free to be attended by the public. And we do have we have sort of a unique form of government and a unique setup there. We have a police board that is appointed by me, and it's a very diverse police board. Currently, we have 50% diversity on the police board, and I think they're doing a fantastic job, really. I mean, we have the highest accredited police department in the region and, you know, one of the highest accredited departments in the country. You know, they have the highest level of accreditation through CALEA.
You know, this is something of an aside, but as you were speaking here, I was thinking of the immediate aftermath of the Michael Brown shooting and the demonstrations that followed and then followed and followed and continued for a long time. Then we had the situation in Baltimore more recently, in which there was a similar kind of situation, if you will. But the way the prosecutor moved on that case, put the lid on immediately by making charges or filing charges against the officers that were involved in this incident. It seemed, as I say, put the lid on. What are your thoughts about that? Did we mishandle that? Did they learn from us, perhaps?
No, I don't think that's the case. I think that every case is different, you know, and I think every situation is different. And, you know, the mayor there and the prosecutor there chose to handle the situation as they chose to handle it. You know, I think if you look at, you know, the destruction that was wrought, you know, in Baltimore, it was significant and staggering, you know. But at the same time, you know, we're dealing with a situation that is not a situation that is historically dealt with very often. Mm-hmm. So approaches, you know, I think you're going to find unique approaches.
All right. Okay, I have to take another break. We'll do that. Our conversation is with Steve Stenger, who is the St. Louis County Executive. We'll continue that conversation in just a moment. We have a number of people waiting online. Stay with us. When we come back, we'll be taking your calls. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back. We continue our conversation with St. Louis County Executive Steve Stenger. A number of things we want to talk about, a number of callers waiting, so let's hit some of these subjects that we want to put on the table. Anyway, we'll start with Drew calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Drew.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on, and thanks, Steve, for taking your time to answer some questions. You had spoken with the you had mentioned in passing in today's radio show, the residents of Spanish Lake. I was wondering if you had any comment on the residents of Spanish Village and your efforts in regards to the Westlake Bridgeton landfill, what you've done so far and where you could see that going.
Certainly. Thanks, Drew. I appreciate your question. You know, one of the things that we did that I think was important really early is I appointed Dr. Faisal Khan to be the head of our health department. And not only did I do that, but I also changed the name of our health department to the Public Department of Health. And that's significant, and it's symbolic, but it's also very practical. One of the things that that Dr. Khan has begun is studies into the areas surrounding both the Bridgeton landfill as well as Coldwater Creek. And he's begun the process of tracking individuals that that lived in those areas and have migrated since then, and the chronic illnesses that have resulted in the surrounding areas. And he's fully engaged with, for instance, groups like the Westlake Moms. They've been to my office several times. I've met with them, with Dr. Khan. And so there's a level of engagement that I think has been very much heightened since the last administration. And I think that the residents in the surrounding area have been pleased to see that. And we try to find representative groups within groups so that we can talk to individuals on a manageable basis. And the Westlake Moms were sort of an advocacy group in that area. And so we've been fully engaged with them. There is only so much you can do at a local level beyond engagement and trying to, you know, bring this situation to light to our federal representative and our state federal representatives and our state representatives, which is what we have been doing. And Dr. Khan has been fully engaged in that process. And one of his missions is to study chronic illnesses through our health department. And he's been doing that, and particularly with respect to the Bridgeton landfill and Coldwater Creek.
Yeah, those folks want that resolved. No question about that. Yeah. Another call. Edie joins us from Overland. Edie, go ahead.
Thank you. Actually, I'm really just calling to commend Mr. Stenger for putting some money into a study for expanding Metrolink. I think the key to any regional development is public transportation and good public transportation. So not only would I like to see the county council put money into the study, but also come up with some money to expand Metrolink, and to get the state of Missouri to contribute some money.
Thanks, Edie. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Edie. I appreciate that. That does mean a lot. And, you know, one of the first things we did when I took office was we changed the name of the Department of Highways and Traffic. Once again, another name change. We changed the Department of Highways and Traffic to the Department of Transportation. And once again, it was symbolic, but it had real practical implications. And I brought in a new director of that Department of Transportation, and that's Nick Gardner. Nick Gardner is also the first African-American to hold that appointment and to lead that office. And he's done an excellent job. He's got varied experience. Part of his experience is in the funding of public transit and the funding of transportation initiatives. And he's done a great job with that. And we met early on with Citizens for Modern Transit, which is an advocacy group for public transportation, particularly light rail. Part of Prop A's promise to the voters was that we would consider Metrolink expansion. And we have money dedicated for it, and that money is just sitting there if we don't use it. So we're going to use $1 million of that money to bring up to the same level of detail as we've seen another study that was a city-county route. We want to bring one of our three possible routes up to the same level of detail of study. And that's going to be the result of a great deal of public input. And Citizens for Modern Transit, through their Transit Alliance, is going to lead that effort and partner with St. Louis County on gathering that public input. It's really important, I think, to have the public input when we choose a route to study. And my hope is that in the future we see a route, you know, built as a result of this study that's going to come about. And, you know, I'm proud of that.
While we're on the subject of money, and we never get very far away from that, it seems, but an audit is currently taking place in St.
Yes.
Louis. What is your expectation? What do you expect to see come of that?
You know, I hope we see a better county government. You know, that's for sure. And you know, one of the things that my goal was to bring integrity to county government, to bring accountability and transparency, and real accountability and transparency. You know, along with the audit, we're also doing an accountability portal that'll be ready probably within the next, I'd say, next 30 days. And it will literally have, that accountability portal will have every account that we have in St. Louis County on it. And people will be able to see where their, you know, their tax dollars are being spent. But with respect to the audit, I am hoping that a number of things come out of it. Number one, I want to find any other areas of fraud that we might have, like we saw in the health department in the last administration. $4.5 million basically walked out of the building, and that's $4.5 million that could have been spent on our citizens. I take that very seriously, and in the area of health, it's even, you know, more significant and serious, particularly when we see the health disparities among zip codes. And that's another one of the areas that Dr. Khan is focused on, is that we, you know, we see someone living in Clayton and living in Wellston, and the life expectancy.
18 years different.
Yeah. You know, and that is something that Dr. Khan is acutely focused on in our health department. So when we see that, so that's the importance of that $4.5 million, and that's where the rubber really meets the road on what this audit is all about. We want to, it is forensic in the sense that if we find transactions like that, we're going to turn those transactions upside down and ensure that they don't happen again. We're also doing a review of all of our internal controls through that audit. We're doing a review of all of our processes, all of our policies. And that data will be gathered as well. Perhaps a second portion of this will be a performance audit on our programs. So I expect that it will make St. Louis County more accountable, more transparent, and I think that there are some real practical benefits that we're going to see. We may just find, you know, where there might be fraud, waste, and abuse, which is what we're trying to eliminate.
When will you have that, the results?
They're going to do approximately 920 hours worth of work. So it depends how many of their accountants are on it at one time. But we've encouraged them to please finish this as soon as possible, but not to sacrifice the quality of their work for timing. Right. You know, it's important that it be done quickly, but it's more important that it be done right.
On the subject of healthcare, which you just raised a moment ago, let's bring in Nathan, who wants to address this issue. Go ahead, Nathan.
Hi, thanks for your time. I was curious, Mr. Sanger, I work in a school-based health center in Jefferson County, and we're opening a second one. Didn't know if you see any opportunities to help the disparities in health for the children in St. Louis County, for opportunities for some school-based health initiatives or school-based health clinics that are permanently located on school campuses in the county.
Yeah, with respect to our health department is available for everyone from the age of zero to, you know, the end of life. And that is an area that, as I said, Dr. Khan, the head of our health department, our public health department, is focused on and engaged in. And I'll tell you another area where we're engaged fully is through our Children's Services Fund. And we had talked about that, I know, during the campaign. Mm-hmm. And our Children's Services Fund provides mental health services for kids from 0 to 19 in St. Louis County. And I'm very proud of the work that that fund has been doing. You know, we began the year with about a $78 million balance. And we are anticipating, even after the money that we receive this year, which is about $50 million, we should lower that balance to $50 million. So it's a $100-some-odd million spend down, which is an investment in the community. And this is the type of fund that needs to be invested and needs to be spent. And a large focus of that money that we are investing in the community is in school-based programs for mental health. And, you know, in some cases, some of the acute issues like, you know, surrounding Ferguson, and also in the lead up to, you know, this next year.
Speaking of healthcare, is there going to be a complete smoking ban in the county, getting rid of some of those exemptions that people are concerned about?
You know, I can't tell you that yet, because that's going to, you know, ultimately that's going to be up to the council, and there are seven members of the council, and the seven members
you support it.
I would support that. Yes, yeah. I mean, I think that it's important that we expand our smoking ban. And when I voted for it the first time, and it was an effort that was led by Barbara Frazier, who was a close member of the council to me and a friend of mine. She now works in county government, by the way, as an educational liaison. She's a lifelong educator and public servant. When we initially worked on that bill, we viewed it as an incremental step, because if you remember, back in 2009, we had no smoking ban, and there was oftentimes smoking in all of our public establishments. So we viewed it as an incremental step. It was a big incremental step, and I think that additional incremental steps will be necessary, you know, in time. And I think that, you know, I'm ready to deal with those issues now, you know, and I think the council is getting ready to do that.
Why are you not interested in working with the city on funding a football stadium?
Well, it's interesting that you say it that way. I was not necessarily interested. I was interested. But we have a situation where our charter, because we passed a charter amendment, and that charter amendment calls for a vote of the people if we're going to have additional funding for a stadium. Now, there are some, you know, legal maneuvers that were being suggested to get around that. And I think it's important that we have a public vote. I mean, I can't get around that. I think that that is going to be absolutely necessary. I think it's necessary legally in the county, and I think it's necessarily from a moral standpoint. I think it's a moral imperative. Now, I met with the governor back, I think, in April, and I met with his staff and my staff, and we had a very open discussion regarding funding of the stadium. And he asked me to speak freely and openly, and I did, and I discussed with him, you know, my issues with respect to the public vote. And we talked about the pros and cons of everything. And there are some pros, some real pros. At the end of that conversation, we were contacted 3 days later. His chief of staff called my chief of staff and advised very politely, very cordially. There was certainly no animus. He advised us that county funding is very complicated, and it would likely have legal challenges. And I think in the best interests of the deal, the state moved forward without us, and the governor wanted to move forward without us. So that was a situation where that was actually the governor's decision, not my decision. And we've continued to have conversations, and I've had conversations with both Mr. Blitz and with Mr. Peacock, you know, discussions relating to our continued cooperation and continuing discussions. And we're very open to those discussions. And there may be things that the county is needed for. You know, we're going to have a dome, and that dome is going to require maintenance. And, you know, we may provide some maintenance for the dome in the future. And we've been providing that now. You know, so that's not beyond discussion.
But there's not going to be a public vote. Obviously, there's not. That's over and done with.
Well, and that is a choice that came at the state level. And if that's what the state chose to do, that's what the state chose to do.
Even if the legal maneuvering that's going on in the city right now over the issue of a public vote, even if that is determined to fall in favor of a vote in the city, it's not going to have any bearing on the county.
No. And one of the things that I had talked about in that meeting that I had was that the initial deal that was contemplated was no vote in the county and a vote in the city. And that disparity there was something that I think was, you know, it was difficult to reconcile in my mind. Mm-hmm. So, But once again, I was very open for discussions about that and talking about ways that we might be able to move forward.
Okay, moving on to back to the listening audience. As time will allow, let's take some calls, and we'll start with David calling from Olivet. Go ahead, David.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to ask a question about Mr. Stenger's understanding of exactly what the Ferguson Commission is going to do. It seems to me that 40 more or more years ago, there was a Kerner Commission, which was discussing many of these same issues. They issued a report, and essentially nothing was ever done about the Kerner Commission report, and there have been multiple reports regarding that, including a 40-year anniversary of the Kerner Commission report. What's different about the Ferguson Commission, and to whom will they report, and what will their recommendations consider?
You know, at this point, that's really beyond, you know, my functions in county government, and that was a state-created entity. I can tell you that I meet regularly with Starsky Wilson and Rich McClure. I've had them in my office several times. And our most recent meeting was very productive. We talked about some of their thoughts just in general about where that, you know, where their report might be going and where their data that they've gathered is leading them. And the purpose of that meeting was to coordinate efforts with our community empowerment division, with county government in general, and many of our initiatives that we have going on. Particularly, I advised them and briefed them on the Great Streets program, talked about the Promise Zone designation, and really was hoping to incorporate some of what we're doing in St. Louis County in with some of the things that the Ferguson Commission is doing now and maybe doing in the future. And so there is some real interaction between, you know, those two individuals. And I have to tell you, I think they're doing great work, and I think they're working very hard. And there is interaction, direct interaction from the county through, as I said, J.R. Carr, who's from our police board.
Yeah. Well, this area has a rich history of having commissions that do a good job, and they come up with a report, and then nothing happens. And,
And I'll tell you, you know, I think that a lot has been happening already, and I think that a lot will continue to happen. And I know from St. Louis County's perspective, we are fully engaged. And this is not, of course, the only issue that we're dealing with in St. Louis County. We're dealing with issues all across the county, and we'll continue to do that. And our Office of Community Empowerment is for the whole county. And they focus on acute issues, and we have some acute need, you know, at this time, and we're probably going to continue to have that acute need, and we're going to have acute needs all over the county, and that's what we're here for.
We have not quite 2 minutes left. I'll squeeze in a quick Paul call, if you will. Paul, make it quick, please.
Yes, Mr. Stenger, thanks for taking my calls. My question is, with respect to the minimum wage, if I understand the legality that you cannot put in some place a similar policy in the county, but might not the county benefit tremendously if the city of St. Louis passes a doubling of the minimum wage? I would imagine that quite a number of jobs would simply relocate from St. Louis City to the county. And as a St. Louis City resident, that seems rather foolish to me. But might the county benefit if the city were to pass that sort of bill?
Paul, thank you for the question.
Paul, yeah, thank you very much. I would say this, you know, I'll just say this as a general matter. I'd like to see higher wages for our working families. There's absolutely no doubt about that. That's not the kind of benefit that we're seeking in St. Louis County by any means, by some decision that takes place in St. Louis City. And that may be the case. It may not be the case. I can't really say. But, you know, I think what we need to focus on in the future is really bending the ears and pushing our state legislature to make a move on minimum wage and make it a statewide, issue, and at the federal level as well.
And of course, if that happened, there'd be no problem with this fragmentation, if I can use that.
Well, exactly. See, and I'm more than happy to lead that charge.
Okay, Steve Stenger, I want to thank you so much for being with us. congratulations on surviving the first 6 months, only 3.5 years to go.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate you having me on. Thanks a lot.
It's good to have you with us. That does it for us for today. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the process of branding and rebranding a company. Then we'll take a look at the Truth Telling Project and its efforts to heal the divide caused by last year's events in Ferguson. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.